And now, just for you, YK World!
Hello and welcome to YK World, a podcast about the goop between music, art, and technology told through the lens of YK Records and the Nashville music scene. I'm your host, Mike Leeds, and this is one doozy of an episode. Before we get to the heft of the episode, I wanted to let you know about a few upcoming bits of YK news that, you know, you should just be aware of. First and foremost, Dave Paulson, who released a concept album in 2018 about the movie Tommy Boy called Sandusky, Ohio, will be playing a show in the city of Sandusky, Ohio for the first ever Tommy Boy Festival. That's right. After 7 years, Dave Paulson will finally be playing the songs of Sandusky, Ohio live. And not only will he be playing them live, he'll be playing them for a crowd of people that are gathered to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the movie that the album is about. For details, go to TommyBoyFest.com. It is happening August 7th through 9th, so you still have some time to plan, to attend. Get yourself to Sandusky. I am mapping it out myself. I hope to make it up there. What an incredible way for this album to find its way in front of an audience. I mean, it's a great record if you haven't heard it. Last episode of this show, we played a song from it. Hopefully you listened to it. Hopefully you've heard the whole record. It's so, so good. I can't imagine what the experience is going to be like to hear those songs in front of people who love Tommy Boy as much as Dave presumably does. Presumably. All right. Enough about Dave Paulson, but you definitely should go to Sandusky. Secondly, a quick reminder that Tristan and Courtney Tidwell will be playing on August 2nd, 2025, at Soft Junk. This was previously scheduled for July, but Courtney actually had her appendix removed, which is generally a blocker for playing a show. We wish her a speedy recovery, and I cannot wait to see the show. As far as I understand it, there will be a set of Tristan songs, a set of Courtney Tidwell songs, and a set of Fizz songs. That's Tristan and Courtney together. August 2nd, 2025, here in Nashville at Soft Junk. Another travel opportunity for you. Come on out. And lastly, there is new music from Chris Crofton and Talking With Hands being released imminently. If you're listening to this the week of July 14th, both artists are releasing new music this week. If you are listening to this after July 14th, the music is out and you should go enjoy it. Look in the show notes, click through, partake. I will talk more about both of the releases later, but just keep an ear out. There's also new music coming from Sugar Skulls collaborating with Coupler on the horizon, but those details are still in the works. But you get a little treat for being a YK World subscriber. You get that inside track first. All right, so for this episode, I have a lengthy talk with Chris Grigg, founder of Ampwall, a music distribution platform that is akin to Bandcamp, but only on the surface level. Bandcamp is a service where an artist signs up, adds their music, and gives fans a conduit to purchase it. This is also true of Ampwall, but as we discuss in just a moment, there are a myriad of differences. I don't want to spoil the conversation, but Ampwall is building a platform that angles to be more than just a storefront. For them, not everything has to have an end goal of being a transaction. Those differences are notable even today. Ampwall can be used by visual artists as well as musical artists. Ampwall can much more easily create collaborative releases between accounts. And practically speaking, Ampwall is continuously releasing new features. They grant access to a Discord that gives a direct line to the developers as well as other users, which results in an incredibly supportive community. Remember that word, community. It comes up a lot. I have been a fan of Bandcamp nearly since its inception, but I can't deny that the last few years have been tumultuous for them and instilled a lack of trust in their future, a disappointment in their innovation, and their willingness to help represent artists being devalued by streaming services. I mean, I'd still work there in a heartbeat if they offered me a job, but my feelings on them have been complicated lately. That's all to say, I find what Ampwall to be doing to be quite intriguing. I do not shy away from the fact that I am a fan. In our conversation, Grigg provides a ton of insight into how the platform came to be, where they are headed, and why they have some policies and practices in place that differentiate them. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but the main themes you are likely to take away from all this is that Ampwall is building a true community for artists, not just a place to sell music. They are providing another place to go, but not just another place, a better place. That's the goal. Before I unleash that conversation, I do want to give you a handful of context. One, we recorded this conversation at the end of May, and I'm just now releasing it here in mid-July. There's no reason for that aside from not having the time to give it a proper edit until now. The upside to that is that some of the observations Grig makes are now downright prophetic, particularly a portion near the end of our conversation about AI and having to validate if a band is even a human. If you haven't heard of the fake AI band Velvet Sundown, go look it up. It's particularly relevant in this conversation. I'm not saying you should listen to it, but you should go look it up and be familiar for the prophetic nature of our conversation. Two, if you visit ampwall.com and go to sign up, you'll see that they ask for a subscription fee to partake in the platform. We discussed this at length in our conversation, but I wanted to tell you up top, don't let that fee be a blocker to your interest. Not only is the fee very affordable, less than a dollar per month, but they'll also waive it for you if you just reach out. Trust me, I have subscription fatigue and completely empathize with not wanting to be a part of something that asks for a fee up front. But as we discuss in this episode, that fee serves many purposes, but it's not meant to impede your interest. Do reach out to them and tell them I sent you. I'm sure they can help you out. Lastly, I just want to give a huge shout out to Chris for taking the time to talk to me. We chatted for an hour, and I think I timed it in such a way that he hadn't even given himself an opportunity to eat lunch. Despite that, he was clear-headed, passionate about the platform, and very articulate about everything they've got going on. Okay, that's enough preamble. Here we go. This is Chris Grig, founder of Ampwall. We're just going to ease right into the proper interview or whatever. What is your background? Like, your current primary musical project is Woe. Is that right?
Yeah. Between Woe and I'm in a death metal band, Glorious Depravity. And yeah, those are like the two main ones. But then I also, you know, I do a fair amount of mixing and producing when I can. That's kind of just like project based really at this point.
What's the high level history here? How do you get to being in multiple metal bands and being a programmer? You know, just like how do those things come to be? Where are you even from?
Sure. So I grew up in South Jersey. Nice. Just outside of Philadelphia. My parents were musicians. So I always grew up seeing my mom playing guitar, my dad playing saxophone. My dad is also an artist, so he was always just working on some kind of project, and nice. He would just have some crazy stuff going on pretty much all the time. And my mom was a folk singer, so she was always writing and practicing and stuff. So as a kid, I kind of just had this experience of just seeing my parents just do stuff.
Yeah,
you know, just go and do stuff. So from that, the idea of like, yeah, you get a guitar and you just write songs seemed like a very natural thing, because I always grew up with this idea of music as a thing that you just do, right?
Yeah.
And then going into high school, getting into punk. Punk has that same, you know, that DIY attitude. That is punk, right?
Absolutely.
It's just you just do shit. So that was a pretty natural fit. You know, just kind of through luck, I just fell in with a crowd that was just very into DIY punk and hardcore and metal stuff, and we just did stuff. Definitely from all that, I'm a huge nerd, and I mean most people playing metal are huge nerds, but I love technology from a really 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 young age. And I was really fortunate. My mom did one of her jobs was like freelance editor of medical journals and textbooks. So she did a lot of contract work, freelance work. And we got a computer pretty early because she used it. She wrote it off as a business expense and justified it that way. So we had a computer in the home when computers were still like personal computers were still a pretty new thing.
Yeah.
And I was really little, and she taught me to type really early on. And they had some friends who were like super, super nerds back in like early 90s. So I had these like adults who I could like ask questions. They taught me about DOS and like, right. you know, how to like yeah. navigate a computer and like think about folder and file and directory structures like a computer. I was like a child.
Right.
Really, really little. And, you know, over time, those things kind of came together. I think like we're of a generation where a lot of musicians work in tech. And I think I would be willing to bet that a huge portion of those musicians working in tech will say that their first website was their band website right. back in the, you know, mid late 90s totally. To learn HTML to like put together a website for your band.
Yep. For sure.
And that's what I did. And, you know, kind of one thing led to another, and you know, I play music and I like code. And
yeah.
So I got a job fixing computers and did that for a while and wrote code on the side. And I kept playing music and I kept releasing albums and yeah. I kept, you know, like sucking less. And these things kind of moved in parallel independently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you can imagine. From there, you know, I gradually eventually started writing code professionally. Along the way, I had some little code side projects that were music related. I built, I ran the site called phillymetal.com for a long time, which was just this PHP site. I didn't know how to write code at all. I didn't know how like the proper way to write code mm-hmm. at all. But I hacked it together with some books that I bought. I wrote it all in PHP, and mm-hmm. it was just this dashboard and show posting thing. And, you know, that was pretty cool. People used it for a while till Facebook came around and everybody moved to Facebook events.
Yeah.
Killed it.
You can bring it back now. I mean, now Facebook is so blasé. We need a phillymetal.com now.
We do. So there's a new one. Somebody built
great.
A couple, 2 years ago, I found out somebody had built phillymetal.net and they did it like as like a spiritual successor to it. So I point the .com.
That's
at
so
it.
Nice.
So they, yeah. You know, have it now.
Amazing.
And yeah, so I mean, that's my whole life story.
So there's a very clear intersection between technology and creative music making. Those two things aren't really, they are parallel paths for you. And so I'm sure you, when you encountered Bandcamp for the first time, that it was a very fascinating and interesting platform to interact with. Like it's a direct to fan kind of platform.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny story about it is when the first Woe album came out, this was like 2006, 2007. Shortly after it came out, I built my own pay what you want music downloading service. And this was with my super rudimentary PHP. And this was before I built phillymetal.com. I think this was like probably the first PHP thing I ever wrote, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wow, you really bit off a lot at the beginning.
Well, I didn't like in the beginning. I mean, you think about like back then, this is like early, like 2006, 2007. It was a lot easier to get up and running. Standards were lower, you know, like web apps, like the web,
yeah.
It was more crude, right? You think about it, like
for sure.
Sites were simpler, hosting technology was simpler. And so it was the era of PHP, and you could kind of just spin it up and write some scripts and, you know, that would show up on the page. And I didn't know, you know, I wasn't living in the world, so I didn't know how complex these things could get or how hard it could be. So I didn't have any authority figures telling me, you need to hire professionals for this.
Right.
This is just very in line with this DIY attitude of just like, yeah, we're just going to do this thing. Like, we're just going to do it. Like, we don't need, like, you know, funding or permission.
For sure. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
So I wound up building my own pay what you want thing when I saw the Woe album was getting, you know, passed around on like Tor, or this before torrents, like blog sites, you know, like music piracy downloading sites. So I built my own little thing, and it did, you know, I sold some stuff, and then some friends wanted to use it. So I expanded it so that they could use it. And for a short period of time, I had this like little pay what you want, you know, pay through PayPal, and it would automatically send you a link to download the zip file. I worked on that for a year, maybe a year or two. And then one day I remember somebody sent me Bandcamp, and I was just like, oh yeah, I'm done. I'm done. I can't compete with this. These guys are like actual professionals, and I'm, you know, I'm a sweaty, overgrown child playing with code, and like these guys know what they're doing. So, you know, I just sent everybody over to that. So cool.
Well, I mean, I am a huge Bandcamp advocate and have been for a very long time, but I think that it is worth noting just sort of the impetus and what I understand to be the history of AmpWall is that Bandcamp was sold to Epic Games, and that was a very worrisome moment for a lot of people in the music community, like, oh shit, this platform that we love and this platform that positions themselves as championing the artist is now been sold to this giant Epic gaming company that doesn't really make any sense. And then a year later, it is sloughed off from Epic and sold to SongTrader, which is a song licensing company that no one's ever heard of. And more than 50% of the staff was fired in that acquisition. And so within like 18 months of time, Bandcamp went from being, you have Bandcamp Friday, you love artists, you are an artist-friendly service, to, oh, this ground is shaky. This is very scary that our careers as musicians and labels are in this platform that is not as stable as we want, and maybe not as artist forward as we thought it once was. That is the impetus behind starting AmpWall, to my understanding. What corrections are there to that history?
There are a few things in there. So I started working on it. You know, the SongTrader announcement was September 2023. I started working on it in January of 2023. So this was way before I knew. And I first had the idea, I actually remember it was the middle of July year before 2022. And I remember, it doesn't really matter how I remember, but I remember when it came to me, I was like by the side of a pool, just relaxing. And I was like, I have to do this. So the sale to Epic was definitely a big part of it. And part of it was, yes, like we've lost Bandcamp, but the other part of it was like how that fits into the greater kind of music ecosystem, which is that it wasn't just we lost Bandcamp, it was that we lost Bandcamp and there's nowhere else to go. And it was this feeling of this realization that independent music and music in general was really dominated by corporations whose motives are not aligned with mine, right? Or we don't actually know what their motives are, right? Like once a company reaches a certain size, their motivations are very different from individuals. I mean, I've never run a corporation that big, but I have to assume, right? Like they're dealing with responsibilities and goals that are just, right, they're just not like ours. And so this idea that like music, but especially independent music, we had no options other than these big corporations, like that sucks. But even besides that, you know, I think like it's really easy to talk about like the ethical, you know, economic disconnect between corporations and individuals. But even just like on a core product level, Bandcamp as a product really stopped evolving a long time ago. And as like a DIY tech guy, like I like to build things, I like to solve problems, I was frustrated by aspects of their service that I really just thought they were letting me down and frustrating me, right? You know, the high take rate, you know, being part of it, but also just the sensation of like, I don't know that, you know, they've stopped evolving, they've stopped adding features, there are things that are missing, I could do this better, like I want to do this better, and I want to just have other options out there, and it would be a fun project, and how hard could it be? You know, all those ridiculous thoughts. But, you know, it's so I think like we're seeing right now, 2025, we are seeing a lot of platforms and groups and individuals come up and say like, oh, we're going to step up to the plate. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them are seemingly motivated entirely by that ethical place, which to me, you know, it's good, like, sure, like be motivated by ethics, but I think that can't be the entirety of your reason for doing it. or at least for me, that's not enough. You know, I think that's a path to, hey, we built like a nice guy's Bandcamp, which is good, I guess. But like, I want to do, hey, we built something that's different and better. Mm-hmm. And here is another option for you. Right. Here is another way of looking at this. Also, it is ethically on a right. more stable footing. But, you know, I don't just want to build a clone of the thing. I want to make it better and make it mine. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think you are making good efforts towards that already. Like, I don't know what your roadmap is, but you can see from just like the way the company is formed, you are doing the moral part of it. You're a public benefit company, right? Like the actual entity, the corporate entity, quote, I'm doing finger quotes, mm-hmm. is a public benefit company, which as I understand it means that you have a charter that you have to follow, which will give back to the community in some way, which you yeah. define. You define what those rules are, but you have to follow it, which is great. Like a lot of corporate, I think the only corporation I know that does that is Kickstarter. Like
Kickstarter, yeah. Patagonia.
Yeah.
Patagonia are,
that adds
are
up.
As far as I know, they're like the best one because they will just routinely, as I understand it, they will routinely just donate their Black Friday proceeds. Mm-hmm. And they can do that. They can do that without being sued by their shareholders. They can do that with the encouragement of the board. And so the reason that I reached for a PBC was because my hope is that it will act as like a sort of like a way of warding off people who are the most predatory, you know, because there are a lot of people, from what I can tell, there are a lot of people swimming around the music space, you know, thinking they can make a quick buck and they don't care mm-hmm. about how it happens. So we want to scare them away. We want to stay right from the start. Like, hey, like we believe in things. Like we want to be successful. We want to make something that's a good business, but we're not willing to do it by exploiting our community. Mm-hmm. We're not looking to do it by putting our own profit or our investors' profit or whatever ahead of the community that we come from. We're a part of.
Yeah.
So my hope is that it will act as a ward against some people, you know, an attraction to others, and some level of coverage in a future state where if, God willing, things go really well and we have all these like opportunities and we're huge, hopefully I want it to give us some cover so we can make good decisions and not be pressured by board members, not be pressured mm-hmm. by shareholders who say like, you know, hey, like your primary responsibility is to increase our right. stock price. We want to be able to say like, oh, actually your stock price, like we don't want to ignore it, but like we have a responsibility right. to these people and to the world, and you can't force us to, you know, sell the company right. to who's someone who sucks, right? Elon Musk. Can't force us to sell it to Elon Musk, right?
Who's someone who sucks? First response, Elon Musk.
Elon Musk.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, so we don't know what will happen in the future. I'm like very much about writing code and building cool things and talking about like some future state where investors are pressuring us to sell. Seems like such like a far off, like we might as well talk about like how we're going to, I don't know, create like the hologram version of Ampwall, you know, for the new hologram hardware that doesn't exist yet, you know, like,
well, I mean, it's okay to have aspirations and to be prepared for things. And I think, you know, I talked to a band one time and was like, hey, you know, I don't have like a lot of reach, like this album's going to come out. And I'm like, you know, I think it's going to be reviewed maybe a couple places and we'll do our best effort. And the artist sort of chastised me, which was shocking, but he was right to do so, and was like, you got to go in with like the most positive expectations. That doesn't mean you have to think that this is going to be a huge record and it's going to be like Michael Jackson level success, but go into the things that you're doing like with the best intentions and like high hopes for everything. So I think that was a, you know, it seems like an obvious lesson, but it's also like, yeah, why can't Ampwall be hugely successful and have investors that are trying to pressure you to sell? I hope that for you.
I mean, you know, on some level, it's a great problem. And you're right. Like, it's good to have, you set your high goals. And we absolutely, like, yeah, we're, there's no, well, there's no reason that we can't take this far. And we're, I mean, I'm all in. I've been full time on it since the beginning of 2024.
Okay. You're full time on it.
Yeah. We through the good fortune of a supportive spouse. We saved up and we planned for this for a little while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's been amazing in supporting me for, you know, the last 2 years while we do this. And a couple of the other members of the team are in similar situations. And, you know, some of the guys are like between jobs.
Yeah.
People kind of come and go. We do believe we are going for it, but there are so many steps between now and investors are pressuring us to sell.
Yeah.
That it can only occupy so many cycles of my brain, right? Like there are so many things to do between now and then that, you know, I have to, it could get a little really overwhelming to think too far ahead.
Well, I think that you're in the right headspace though, because you're building a community while at the same time building a product. And what got us down this track was talking about Bandcamp sort of not innovating anymore and how you saw a better way. And I do think the PBC is a big part of that because it is a better way and it is it's obviously you dedicating yourself to a community. But I am also curious if you could speak about just from the product side, like if someone's listening to this and they don't know about what Ampwall does, what do you see as the current like differences between yourself and a Bandcamp? And then where do you see it going as well? And I think that is more important because there's going to be a period of time where you're just going to have to do like a little bit of feature parity where like
yeah.
There's just some expectations that people have. But then we know that Bandcamp, as much as we might like them, they aren't doing a lot very quickly. And maybe that's just because they're stable and why do they need to? Or maybe it's because they're scared or maybe they don't have the resources because they fired everybody. Who knows? But where do you see the differences and where do you see it going?
Sure. So, I mean, I think like, and you're right. Like a lot of our effort is still working on feature parity because people come in because they have been the only game in town for such a long time that people come in, it's their only frame of reference. And you have a generation of musicians out there who they've never literally like never known anything else. I mean, you know, I remember when they started, I remember DIY before them. I remember DIY after them. And there's just a generation of kids who literally have never known anything else. And the thought of using something else for a lot of them is just like, well, why? Why would I do that? So they come in with certain expectations for better or worse. So a lot of the current differences are like subtle things, you know, subtle product decisions around like hyperlinks. Like we can talk about like hyperlinks, right? Like a lot of the new tech companies, like, you know, they all talk about they want to create protocols and interoperability. The best protocol we have right now is HTTP.
Yeah.
The social mediaization of communication, right? Like a lot of these platforms, they want to keep you on the platform and they emphasize internal links between their content and they work hard to make it so you can't leave the platform. Right. And Bandcamp is absolutely guilty of this, where the only links you can put are in that like little section off to the side and everything else is really built around staying in the platform. And I think like you see a lot of details like that in their product because their primary revenue stream by and large is sales, right? Like they're a marketplace. Mm-hmm. They sell things. And when they're not selling things, they're giving stuff away and they're losing money on stuff.
Right.
So they have an incentive to keep you on the platform and make it, you know, like discourage people from leaving. So it's the little links on the side and you get, you know, the community section, you can put links in there, but by and large, they want to keep you there. And if you think about like those product decisions for them say a lot of things about what they prioritize and who their product is for. Their product is for bands and labels that sell things. End of story. That's it.
Yeah.
But we know that music communities are a lot more than bands and labels who sell things and people who buy things, right? It's also the journalists writing about it. It's also the podcasts who interview extremely cool people, including myself. It's the visual artists, the people booking shows and on, right?
Yeah.
Bandcamp doesn't have spaces for those people because it does not see them as relevant to the discussion of music communities, right? It doesn't see them. They are others. They are outsiders. There are no hyperlinks to their content other than in little regulated areas. Ampwall, we made a decision really early on. We're going to have rich text fields wherever feasible for technical reasons. We're going to allow and encourage external links to the things that make you happy wherever we possibly can. So that's descriptions of albums, that's dedicated sections for press links. So on an album page, you can link to all those cool interviews and reviews you're getting. It's linking out to the artists, even if their stuff is outside. When we add show listings, we're going to make it really easy to add ticket links and on and on. And those kinds of decisions about, like, how do we find ways of connecting what we build to the rest of the music scene, wherever it may be, on amp wall or off, those are like pervasive through like how we look at it and how we see our jobs. You know, we see it as like building stronger music communities as opposed to just an online record store. You know, and I think, like, you know, you see it in other little details, like when you buy something, you can cover the fees on behalf of the artist. Most of our buyers do that. We have dedicated pages and features for visual artists. Visual artists can like create pages and be linked to the albums and merch that's using their stuff. They could sell their own prints. We're going to expand that for zines and bloggers and people who want to write about music. They'll have a space there too. But if they don't, you can still link out to them. You can still credit them. You can still be connected with them. Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of gets into like both what's different now and you know, where things are going. We spent a lot of time thinking about how we can be more inclusive of people who are othered on Bandcamp. Yeah, I can keep going. You can, I will stop.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is all great stuff to hear, and you are welcome to keep going whenever, you know, whatever details you want to add, for sure. I think it's great. Speaking of the community aspect of it is big. I have many jumbled thoughts at the moment. Speaking to the features that you're talking about and where you're headed and the community that you're building, I think one of the hardest blockers that you're facing is the pay up front fee. Like, if you are a musician and you come to Ampwall and you have only known Bandcamp, which is sign up for free, upload your stuff for free, it's there, people can listen to it. And if someone buys it, then there's a revenue share. That's their model. Ampwall's model is not that. And that is a hard pill for some to swallow, particularly DIY musicians that like don't have a budget and are just like, why would I pay for this? Now, I have my own reasons for feeling like this is a good decision, but I would love to hear from you. What is your pitch for why people should pay?
Yeah. So the really, really simple place where that started was the reality of when we started, we didn't have any outside funding. Like it was me and my wife, and it was what we were willing to put into it. Mm-hmm. And data storage is not free. Like, it's just not free. Like, it's I'm glad that there are services that can give away storage, but early on, like, you know, it's not free. And you think like, well, I'm just one band and I have one album and it's like 30 minutes, but you know, a 30-minute album transcoded into, like, somebody can download it in 5 or 6 different formats.
Yep.
And then you imagine that across a city, across a state, across a country, like that scales up really fast. The money side of it, it made us uncomfortable. Like it was all coming out of pocket. So I needed to put some limit there to keep us from potentially going broke. Right. It's also like, it's harder to add fees later on. It's really easy to take things away and say, hey, guess what? We're going to do this cheaper for free. Yeah. You can't really, when you take a free product and suddenly you're like, hey, actually, it turns out I can't afford this. Now everybody has to pay. Like,
right.
Horrible. So we can always find ways to like make that easier. And we're talking about it. We have sketches for it. We really want to make it easier. And the other side was just, I don't like transaction fees. I don't like taking money from bands and from artists and labels. In my perfect world, we would charge more monthly and we would reduce or eliminate fees. I find it really frustrating when I feel good about my sales on Bandcamp and then I see the numbers and realize that, like, you know, I've lost 10 to 15% of what I sold. for a platform that like hasn't, you know, that it's leaving a lot on the table. Yeah. You know, it's leaving a lot of features on the table that I think could help with sales more. And by charging up front, I mean, we priced it based really on like, what does it cost us to host this? If somebody uses 100% of their time and it's downloaded into all formats, and there are a lot of other fees along the way, you know, we have our servers and mm-hmm. various data transfer and stuff. What does it cost us? We're like, okay, that's what we're going to charge. So it, you know, it's an extremely low fee for data storage that lets us keep our transaction fees lower because we don't have to tax high sellers, essentially.
Yeah.
We don't have to force bands into revenue share agreements with us. We have a small transaction fee that like really it covers some like additional capacity that we have to support. When things go really well, we scale servers up, you know, there are added costs in there. Again, in my perfect world, we would get rid of that entirely. But I know that that's not palatable for everybody, right? Like there are a lot of artists who don't care about selling. They just want a place to share their music. And we want to be there for them too. You know, it's tough.
I'm sure it is tough. And taking money from anyone is always a big ask. I totally agree. But from my perspective, what I get for paying for Ampwall is not just a place to sell my music. And I understand that might be a lot of people's desires, but I am in your Discord now. I am like, I can find a bug and leave it and someone responds pretty quickly, or I can have an idea and leave it and it might get shot down or it might get talked about some more. Like there is a direct line to participating in this thing. And I mean, I'm defining community here, but it is a fee to get in the door to be a part of this, but you're not just getting like a page on a server. Like there is a community if you choose to participate in it. And beyond that, you see other bands sharing stuff in the Discord. You can share your own stuff and someone else will see it. Like you are immediately entered into a world where like you're helping your own discoverability. You're finding friends and like-minded people, even if they're not in the same genre. So
yeah.
I think the price of admission is far more than just a storefront from my perspective.
Totally agree. I totally agree. And I think like, you know, this speaks back to, I mean, I hate to keep like ragging on Bandcamp, but like this speaks to another, like a really key philosophical distinction about like, who is it for? And you know, if they are a music store and it's for people who are selling stuff, we see ourselves like as a community platform to help artists and music communities feel joy and feel success, their measure of success. Success is not the same thing for everybody. Bandcamp defines success as you're selling a lot of stuff. We define success as you are happy with what you're doing and you found your people and your people are happy mm-hmm. that they found you. And so by charging a subscription fee, we are able to prioritize more than just sales, right? We're able to invest in features that are unrelated to sales. We're able to put effort into just like productivity tools and tools that make artists happy, like you know, promotional tools and mailing lists and mm-hmm. just like things that you would probably have to pay for outside. And you know, some of these are still crude, like our mailing list stuff is still a work in progress, but like
but at least you know, it's in progress.
It's in progress and our blogging tools are a work in progress, but it's in progress. Like you know, I think like the subscription fee really speaks to the idea that like you know, we're trying to take as little money from sales as possible because sales are not intended to be our primary revenue stream. Mm-hmm. Sales are not we're not trying to just kind of like tax high sellers, right?
Yeah. I've always been a big fan of the phrase ubiquity is key. Like just be everywhere. Like there's not a selection here between like you got to be a Bandcamp person or you got to be an Ampwall person. You got to pick right now. Like you can be on both. Now you might want to prioritize which one you drive people towards, but like just isn't a line in the sand. Like
no. It's not. And you know, everybody's on, like I'm on all the platforms. Like I still have my Bandcamp page. Like, I still have Bandcamp.
Totally.
Like we have an audience there. I've been there for more than 15 years or something. Like Woe has a big audience there. It's fine. fine. People are there. But, you know, our community, the Amplwell community, between Discord and Blue Sky and Instagram, like it's growing, and we're finding that people are making friends, and they're discovering music they wouldn't have discovered otherwise. And somebody remarked on Blue Sky yesterday, like, I found this poster. He was saying, we have more followers on Bandcamp, but we sell more on Amplwell. And I think that's a testament to how engaged our audience is.
Yeah.
I'd like to say it's a testament to, you know, the Discord. We have a Discord server. We have a lot of people in there now, and all of the releases, all the new releases feed into that. And, you know, there's just a lot of discussion and a lot of activity. It's getting easier to find music. So, you know, I'm proud of where it's going. I think, you know, one of the other pieces of the subscription piece that has become really evident is that it's become a really great tool against a certain class of abuse and spam that you find on platforms. We were concerned early on that we would kind of be a lightning rod for a lot of individuals who've been removed from Bandcamp. You know, there are a lot of bands and labels who've been kicked off, especially coming from the metal scene, right?
Right.
And early on, we were concerned that we'd be flooded with them or with AI, low effort AI garbage.
Mm-hmm.
The subscription fee, I mean, it's we're talking like less than a dollar a month here.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
Like 80 something cents a month when you really get down to it. That low amount has essentially stopped a certain class of spam and abuse from existing on Amplwell. We do every now and then, we do find like weird AI thing, and we send them a takedown notice. Like we send them a notice saying like, sorry, this isn't who this is for.
Mm-hmm.
But like a lot of abuse, it just doesn't exist. Now, as time goes on, scale increases, you know, eventually you're going to get some bad actors in there, but it's helped us a lot, like manage our workload. And in this state where there's still a lot of work to be done, we need to, you know, keep our support use low, and having that subscription fee has acted as a kind of nice barrier to entry to just like, you know, keep the community focused on like the people who really want to be there and
yeah.
who are going to be engaged and going to participate. So as a result, I think we have like a really lovely group of people from a really diverse set of like music backgrounds from all over the world. It's extremely cool.
Yeah, I agree. Amplwell, because I think of where you came from, kind of started very metal focused, or at least your first tests, your first dip into the pool, very metal, like your friends are in metal bands, et cetera, et cetera. And it has grown from there. I want to be very clear to anyone listening. It is not a metal based music platform, music community. It is a very rich tapestry of genres and people, for sure. But there is something very fascinating about the supportive side of the metal community that I don't know if you recognize that or not, but as someone from outside of the metal community, metal can be very intimidating and scary. I mean, not only just the sound of it, but just like the appearance of it, the brutal is often an adjective used for it. But you get in this Discord and everyone is so pleasant and just so nice. And I mean, that speaks to, you know, appearances are not everything, but like, there's a massive amount of support coming from people that if you just ran into them on the street, you would like maybe bow your head and just move along, you know?
Well, yeah, by and large, the metal community is one of the more loyal, you know, like consistent, reliable blocks within music scenes. Metal people show up, they show up for their bands, they want to promote each other and so on. At the same time, you know, the Amplwell Discord, like we were saying, like it's a very self-selecting group, right? You've got the portion of the metal community that's willing to pay for to beta test the premium alternative mm-hmm. to, you know, to this monopoly. So you're gonna get like the most open, forward-thinking group of a group that's by and large probably more open and forward-thinking than others. Still, I think that's a big part of it. But you're right, you know, metal fans very often are, you know, you get like they're diehards, you know, it's a lifestyle, it's an yeah. identity. It's, you know, it's part of who you are, it's part of who I am, you know, and I don't listen, you know, I have days and weeks and months where I don't listen to a lot of metal at all.
Mm-hmm.
but it's still just like part of,
yeah,
part of who I am. And there's no escaping that. But I think, like, you know, when we talk about like why, you know, what Ampwall means to me, and every now and then there will be somebody who's like, you know, how do we know you're not just going to sell us out? And I don't know that they understand the relationship between like music, this music scene, and the lifers who are, you know, who are committed to it. Like, you know, the core team, like we all come, most of us come out of the metal scene, and like the thought of, you know, we can't harm Ampwall or like do something that like sells out Ampwall without like selling out like our own identity.
Right.
Like, it might be different from, I think, the way a lot of people like relate to music and their musical identities.
Well, it's much appreciated for sure. I've been very much enjoying it. The last controversial topic I want to ask you about is your policy against AI artwork.
Sure.
Or maybe just AI in general.
AI.
I know that you are not an anti-AI, anti-technology person. So there is nuance to this that I think might get glossed over. So I'd just like for you to speak about what is the policy and why is the policy.
Sure. Yeah. So to my knowledge, Ampwall has the strongest policy against AI content of any music platform that you can sign up for today. We don't allow AI generated images or sounds on any albums, any music releases. You know, a lot of the policing of that is a combination of like, we have some automated tools for looking at artwork where we send it off to a service and they tell us if likelihood of it being AI. We found it's pretty damn inaccurate. But then it's that, and it's a community effort. And then it's just a lot of language within the platform and in our terms of use, where we just try to remind people like, hey, keep this off the site. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't a policy that like I personally came up with. This was a very much a community thing, supported entirely by the team, and it's evolved over time. But this is something that the community really, really feels strongly about. And I'm actually still really surprised that other platforms haven't like adopted similar policies. But I mean, at the end of the day, we see AI generated images and sounds as being the product of companies that have really ripped off independent artists. You know, every commercial, free commercial, whatever you want to call it, every AI image generating tool that's out there is trained on works mm-hmm. of other people. You know, they are these companies with, by and large, with like a lot of funding, who went out and they trained their AIs on the work of people who created their own styles or slaved over this and grew up, and it's their identity, just like metal's my identity. And they built these tools that let people just rip them off without any effort. So on its surface, it's just offensive. It's just stolen work. And then past that, it's taking work away from the very artists who make music scenes possible. Like if we look at visual artists, like the visual artists, the people doing like cover art and merch and posters and et cetera, they more often than not right now, like you'll see an album's cover art before you'll hear the music. You know, they are making the first impressions. They are creating these crucial, crucial pieces of what we all do. And we're taking work away from them and we're farming it out to tech that is built by corporations who stole from these people who were replacing. And then the music is the same deal. The music is a little bit different because I think it's generally sounds bad. I mean, it's generally just bad. It's going to get better though. It's all going to get better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like all of the commercial, all of the like the really polished, good sounding music generating tools, they're all built on copyrighted works. They're all built on stolen works of people who suffered and, you know, just poured their lives into making music. And we don't think that has any place in a music community. we think that by allowing it on a platform, you insult and cheapen the effort of the people around it. It also just, it looks bad. You can see an AI image from a mile away. You see it and it's you can tell right away the sounds, the music sounds, I mean, it just sucks. So you know, we drew a line in the sand saying we will not allow any of it.
It's a very respectable stance and it's a hard stance. And I think the reason you don't see other platforms taking it is because it's not only hard to police, but it's hard to take that stand, you know? Very hard. Yeah. So it's admirable.
I think it's hard to police. I don't really know. Why do you think it's hard to take the stance? Is it because there are just people who don't get it and it's just like a fight that you're going
to
have?
Because it's so much easier to just acquiesce and just be like, well, I guess Adobe's got Firefly. You could use that. It's trained on just their stock material. But other stuff, you're like, we don't know. We don't know what OpenAI did. You don't know for sure that it was, you know, like kind of eye-rolly and like, I always feel like tech companies, they are often interested in their bottom line only. They don't want to rock the boat because there is a potential there. If Bandcamp comes out and says no AI, anything, well, now they can't be friends with Midjourney. They can't be friends with ChatGPT. They can't be friends with Microsoft. Like there's every big player is involved with AI. And if you take a stand that's like, I don't agree with this, you run the risk of creating a rocky relationship. In reality, that's not likely to happen. Like, I don't think Microsoft would be like, well, if you don't like OpenAI, we're never going to work with you. They'll probably just be like, that's fine. We have all the money on the planet. It's fine. Like,
yeah.
But there's a perception. So taking a stance has a perception of, well, I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to be seen as like the person that's, you know, kind of standing out against this thing that everyone else is going along with. But the reason they're going along with it is because it's their business. You know?
And, you know, and our, I mean, our policy, we try to write in a conversational way that's like easy to make sense of, but also it does leave the door open to like, we don't know how the technology is going to change. We don't know how standards are going to change over time. Now, we're never going to allow work that's trained on copyrighted work. Like, personally, I don't care if we ever allow work that's trained on public domain work. Like, right. I don't care if we exclude it forever and if we lose some business. Like, I don't care. But you know, I think that there's a likely future state where even professional artists who are opposed to 100% LLM generated AI, maybe there's some Photoshop tool that's some filter and it becomes like a standard. And if you don't do this, you can't commit, you know, you can't work professionally because people are accepting it. And if we refuse to do that, we've suddenly made things impossible for labels. And, you know, there are these like downstream effects of technology changes and it evolves. So we don't know where it's going to go. You know, I think there's probably some really good uses of AI to like invent new synthesizers and to like create new synth plugins or new ways of processing audio that are closer to a digital effect than anything else. So, you know, we've tried to carve it out and make it clear that like, we're not trying to stand in the way of progress. We're not trying to say you can't use new technology. We're not trying to be, you know, the people who opposed synthesizers when they first came out. We are saying that we don't want low effort stolen garbage on our platform, which to me is a sensible position. Like I was thinking about this the other day and it occurred to me that like in the future, like probably really soon, a job of labels and record labels and platforms is going to be vetting the people they work with as humans. And one of your job, Michael, in the very near future, when you get a submission, one of your jobs is going to be to make sure, prove that you're a real band. Prove it. Like, prove it. Because when I release this record, my audience is counting on me doing the due diligence to prove that you're a real person.
Yeah.
And when it goes on Ampwall, there's going to be an expectation that we have vetted you and we know that YK Records only works with real people. And the ability to trust the digital content that we're exposed to is only going to get harder and impossible at a certain point. So curation is going to be a task of not just finding stuff that stands out and has, you know, hits the certain artistic notes. It's also going to be one of like verifying that, like, yeah, I've verified. I know these guys. I know these guys. I've seen the play. Like, I've seen their rehearsals. Like, these are real people. So I think that like our rules are going to have to be the standard, or the future is going to look like Spotify, where you have these playlists that are mixes of
yeah, but
AI.
Spotify paid for that.
Spotify paid for that. Yeah. Spotify encourages that, right?
Yes. Not even encouraged. Made it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bandcamp has AI music. Bandcamp has a lot of AI music on it. There's AI metal. There's like these blatant albums. Over time, that's going to be more of a problem. Yeah. Over time, you are 100% going to get submissions from bands who are using AI, and you'll have to make a choice of like, either it's okay or you don't want it. How do you prove it?
Yeah.
How do you vet that? So I think that our policy is in an effort to kind of get ahead of that, because one day it won't just be ugly, low effort crap. It will be indistinguishable from the real thing. And we have a position on it now, while it still sucks to cut it off now, and just be aware of it and thinking about how do you filter this out.
Yeah. Okay. I got two quick last things. One, did you know in 2014, Garth Brooks started an iTunes competitor and it was called Ghost Tunes?
I did not know that.
He did not like what iTunes was paying musicians. So he said, I'm going to start my own and it will be more equitable, and it will be, it's called Ghost Tunes. And that was that's why it's been impossible to find Garth Brooks music on all of the streaming things for forever, because he had his own service and then Amazon bought it in 2017. So it was 3 years on the web.
Wow.
And you know, he's like, not in a good, he's got some allegations against him that of course we believe the people who are posing allegations against him, but there's still a very funny fact that Garth Brooks started an iTunes competitor called Ghost Tunes.
Ghost Tunes. Yeah. Couldn't even be, gotta be a better name.
You gotta look up the Wikipedia, because the logo is gonna blow your mind.
When you start from a place of like, I don't know, it's like iTunes, but it's a ghost tunes. Like, I guess, is that a joke about how like they're basically a ghost because nobody was using it? Like, what?
I honestly have no idea. It's not obvious for sure. Thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, you looked at it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Look at this. Look at this.
Something else.
Amazing.
And then lastly, I just want to know if you want to shout out anybody on your team. What do you want people to know? What's your summarizing thoughts for those listening in?
I don't know. If I start shouting out people, I'll never stop. We have a really killer core team of people. I'm not going
to. Yeah, you don't have to name names, but there's a core team working on Ampel. It's not just you.
Yeah, it's not just me. It's not just me. Charles and Chris, other Chris are working full time, and you know, we have Caroline, and Steve is running our socials, and he's amazing.
Doing great.
He's incredible. Yeah. Isn't he amazing?
He's doing great. The enthusiasm is phenomenal. Yeah.
He's my favorite person to shout out, because he's so, everything he does is so joyful and generous and genuine.
And,
there's not
genuine.
A cynical bone. There is a cynical bone in his body. I'm telling you, like, even when I DM with him, like, he doesn't curse. Like, he's just just the sweetest person.
Yeah,
I mean, I think, you know, closing thoughts, if you've never heard of Ampwall, I hope you'll check us out. You can reach out to us on, Steve runs our Blue Sky, but I'm there all the time, and Instagram or whatever. You can email us anytime. And I guess, you know, I think we talked a lot about the subscription thing. And a thing I should have said at the time earlier, like, a funny detail about it is, like, we still give away a lot of subscriptions, like a lot. We give away a lot of time, a lot of subscriptions, pretty much. I shouldn't, this is advocating against my own business.
This is bad business for you.
Bad business. But like, we give away time for like basically anyone who's cool and asks very eagerly. Like, we would rather have people on the platform than not. And we've had a good number of people who've come to us with just like, hey, like, you know, I'm paycheck to paycheck or whatever, I just can't do it right now. And that anybody who's going to be a good community member and comes to us in good faith, like, we want them on the platform. And we're planning, we have some ideas of like how we can reduce the barrier to entry even more. We think over time we'll have even more and more options as we get bigger. But really, I mean, I think anybody who's hearing this and wants to be in a place where their work is valued, whether they're selling 1,000 records a month or zero, like, you know, we want to be on your team. Like, you know, we really hope you'll talk to us and come hang out with us.
That's fantastic. I think that's a great summation. And I will, this is all be wrapped in an intro and an outro. So at the top, I will be sure to remind people that there is a subscription, but do not let that block you from being interested in this, because there is a community there. And you're, as far as I can tell, you are building a business and the primary goal is community. Now, obviously, you want monetization to come along with that because you it is a job, but community will foster that.
It will. It will. And we, you know, I think like a lot of our plans for the platform, especially like where monetization is concerned, we think there's like there are a lot of opportunities with the technology that we're building to help labels and to help people who are more business minded, right? Like, I don't think that our core in, you know, 5 years from now, I don't think the bulk of our revenue is going to come from transaction fees. Like, I think it'll come from connections, using our APIs and using our tech to power other products and opening up our platform to people who want to use our technology. But I think that community for Amplewall as a platform, community is the key. And above all else, like, we really just want a space to help people escape the monotony and the feeling of helplessness that we get on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it definitely does that. Anytime I see someone sign up that's from Nashville, I'm like, yes, Nashville's getting it. They're understanding. It's happening organically.
It's happening.
It's great.
Yeah.
I think you said it earlier that there's somewhere else to go.
Yeah, there's somewhere else to go. And I like, hope you'll forgive me rambling on. I hope you edit this or something. But, you know, I think like another, if I can wax philosophical more, I think like another big motivation when we talk about like how we started doing this was this feeling of like helplessness and frustration with the experience of being a band in like the social media age. Mm-hmm. You know, your successes only ever live as long as the algorithm allows.
Yeah, which is not long.
Not long. And so a lot of what we're building does come from this idea of like, okay, how can we give people places where the things that matter to them last? And that's what a lot of the external links are about. It's like, you know, how do you give them like just a place to collect their successes, a place to like, you know, not just for outsiders, not just for promotional tools, not just for selling stuff, mm-hmm. but just so I can look at it and be like, oh yeah, I was on this best of list, or oh yeah, I did this interview. This was cool. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think also with the algorithm specifically, Spotify is always the example that comes up, but literally every single one of them, streaming platforms, is guilty of this same thing. And pretty much they're all complicit in the exact same quote unquote crimes. Like, they're all bad. But Spotify is a great example because it does not care about anything that is not new. Like, to circle back to our beginning of our conversation, you're talking about listening to this Dave Paulson record that's about Sandusky, Ohio. It's a concept album about Tommy Boy that came out in 2018, 2019. Like,
did it?
Yeah.
Oh, see, you just put it on Amplewall recently.
I did.
Because I'm obsessed with it. I'm obsessed with this record.
But it came out years ago. And if I put that up on, it's on Spotify, but if I just put it up today, no deal. We'll not going to care at all.
Because they're based, it's very much like social media. It's an economy based around what's new, what's happening right now. And that is kind of in opposition of people who want to build a deep connection with music. It's in opposition of artists who spend a lot of time mm-hmm. carefully crafting, creating their music, especially if it's challenging and it takes time to really sink in. Spotify is always like, what's on to the new thing, new release Friday. And that's not just the music that suffers. It's the artists, it's the journalists, it's the blogs, it's the podcasts, everyone who suffers from like, you know, I put time into this, I put thought into this, but the relationship that somebody consuming it will have is always going to be shallow, superficial, and very, very temporary. So we think that a lot of what we're building needs to be in service of creating spaces that are more permanent, spaces that last, spaces so that, okay, you're listening to the album and you have an easy way of finding finding resources that will help you appreciate it more, help you get a deeper understanding and build a connection with it, build a fan base, build a community that's going to be there for you if it takes you 2, 3 years, 4 years to release another album, so that you don't feel that pressure of like, oh, I have to, I got to create content to stay relevant. They'll all forget about me.
This is
one of those, when we talk about like, what was Bandcamp lacking, you know, that inspired me to build this. It was like this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all the new features that have been coming out. The new search and explore page. Great. Doing great work there. I know that you've been working on gapless playback. Talking with Hands will be very excited if you get gapless playback working. Hey, no promises, but he's going to be stoked.
It's in the mobile app. Going to be. That's my hope. They're a tech challenge.
This is really just a test for Matthew Smith if he listened to this episode or not. And if he makes it this far, I don't know what I'll do for him, but I'll do something. Buy him an extra coffee.
I don't know what I'll do something, but I'll ask you to do something for him if he makes it this far.
I really appreciate you chatting with me. I would love to continue chatting with you and just reminding people that this exists. So like in a month, in 2 months, whatever, like let's chat again and keep, I don't want this to just be like a, we talked to Impal one time. Like this is a community thing. This is like something that I really feel excited about. And there are there's alternatives to Impal and alternatives to Bandcamp, but this one feels the most lively. I'm so glad that you all made it and that I'm a part of it. And it's so exciting to watch it grow. And I just really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me about it.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you're here too. As you know, I'm like a coming a bit of a super fan of YK Records. Like I feel like I listen to like more and more of your releases. So yeah, I'm really happy to do this, man. I'm so happy that you're with us. And I really, really can't tell you how much I appreciate the support.
Fantastic community, man. It's the best. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you on the Discord.
We'll talk on the Discord. We're gonna get off this and just keep talking.
So true. All right. Take care. All right. Thank you so much to Chris Grigg for taking time to talk to me about all of that. I was already a fan of Impal, but hearing so much clarity and articulation on their whole vision really cemented my excitement for everything they are doing. Re-listening to that conversation during editing, I have so many more thoughts about distribution and building community and follow-ups for him. I am positive we really will have him back. I can't wait. Hear his band Woe at woeunholy.ampwall.com. Hear Glorious Depravity at gloriousdepravity.ampwall.com. These are in the show notes. Find Impal on Blue Sky at ampwall.com. Find them on Instagram at ampwall. Highly recommend following both. But most importantly, join Impal. Go to Impal.com and create an account. If that subscription fee feels like a blocker, reach out to the Impal team. And again, tell them I sent you. They are happy to work with folks and they're really doing a fantastic job growing the platform. Okay, that's it for this one. Our intro theme and music beds are by the one and only Mac Burris. Find him at Mac Burris on Instagram and thank him for me. I could never thank him enough. That intro is so good. All right, everybody. Take care of yourselves. I'll talk at you later. Bye.